Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with our crime expert, Sarah McJulian. I'm going to call you crime expert.
Makes me sound like I'm really good at crime.
Yeah, you are good at crime. She also likes to read the crime genre, so I'll put that in as plus the crime. Sitting across from Sarah Bailey, who's coming to talk about her second novel, Into the Night. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to speak to you about this book because I really loved it.
Did you happen to see Sarah's review?
I did, yeah. And it made my week. It was amazing. No, I was very relieved. I think, I think it's always nice to get a good review, but especially maybe for a second book, it's sort of those first few reviews are pretty nerve-wracking.
Oh, my God, the first wasn't a fluke, is that it?
Yeah. Well, no, I was speaking to someone about this the other day. Like, I think once you've had a book out and people have – well, you know, it's been reviewed in all kinds of ways, but I guess what you don't ever really think about is the second book having something that it is instantly compared to. So it does, in a weird way, feel like an extra layer of pressure.
So you're competing with yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
You set your own benchmark that you have to meet.
Yeah, and they're different books, but I guess that people are always then going to naturally want to compare them. So I think there's, you know, I can sort of see things that I like about the second or the first more or less, but other people will obviously sort of have something directly to compare it to, which is a bit scary.
I don't even know now which one I like more. Like, I feel like you really nailed it with this because you tried something quite different for the character, and I just wanted to ask, was that, did you consider, you know, was it scary, basically, like making so many changes for Gemma? Or do you want to tell people a little bit about the book so that this conversation makes sense?
Yeah, so I haven't thought about this too much, but I guess, I mean, I definitely see it as a season two of a series, if that makes sense. Like, if it was a TV show, it would be season two. So
anyone wants to make that into a TV show?
I would watch that so quickly.
But I think what I mean by that is that it's a sequel in every way, and it is a continuation of the character's story. So, you know, it's a separate book and it's a separate sort of narrative. You could read it, I guess, on its own. I don't know what that experience would be like, but I do, for me, writing it felt like season two, and I would love to say that it was really strategic and that I deliberately changed, you know, where she was at and a few things, but I think it was pretty instinctive. I didn't really ever intend to write a sequel, so there wasn't a lot of planning when I was writing the first book about what the second one might be. But once I did finish the first book, I sort of had a few ideas that started kicking around, and then the opportunity to write a second book came up, which was, you know, amazing. So I had already had a few vague thoughts, but it felt really right to me that Gemma would leave her hometown. So that's a bit of a spoiler for the second book, but it's right from the start. So, yeah, it's set a couple of years later. She's really moved on in her life, but she's still not in a happy place. So it's a real middling book for me. Like, she really does kind of have to learn a lot of hard truths, even as an adult. You know, she's not a young person, but she's really kind of almost having a coming of age, I think, in the second book. So I think it felt right to me. It was a bit scary having written the first draft of the new book, so it was pretty set in terms of the environment and everything. And then I started reading a few reviews and people were saying, I can't wait to see the small town brought to life in the second book. And I think, well, that's a shame because it's not going to be. But I didn't really ever doubt that it was the right thing for the character development. It's kind of that season two thing where you're like, well, I think you can mine that small town and it would have probably been okay, but it just didn't feel like she would have kind of developed enough as a character to warrant that being the environment.
So in writing your second book, there's so much you learn in writing any book.
Yes.
So you come to the second one with, you know, more confidence for one, but all this new stuff, these techniques, these abilities that may not have been there when you put pen to paper on the first book. Did it make you sit back and think, how complex can I make this little guy? And do I feel that comfortable with what I'm doing to, you know, to really draw these, you know, have these different characters, go into depth, really look at the setting and the complexity of my plot? Like, do you feel a bit more confident in all that sort of stuff in the second one?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's almost two aspects of it. Maybe for me, I felt like writing the second book, there's a confidence in knowing that you can do it. Mm. So there's the sort of that, there's like an underlying faith that I've done it before, I therefore can do it again somehow. But then I think there's also the element of kind of saying, oh my God, I know how hard this is. So you sort of have more confidence, but then you also don't kid yourself as much either. Like you're like, this is going to get really hard and I'm going to have to untangle this crazy plot that I make for myself. So it's sort of a blessing and a curse, I suppose. You're just less ignorant, I guess. But I didn't want it to be simple. Like I like the kind of crime I like to read is quite complicated and it's not just plot driven. It's got a lot of character stuff in it as well. And so I suppose I didn't want to kind of skimp on that. I wanted to make sure that her character really was developed properly or in a way that I felt like it was going to give her the narrative arc that she needed to have in the book. But yeah, I mean, it still drove me nuts. Like it was still parts of it where I was like, I can't work out how to fix this or how to bring it all together. Or if I change that, I'm going to have to change that. So it's a pretty similar process and it just takes time, I think, you know.
Is her character the thing you cling to as you go through it?
Yeah.
The book has to kind of develop around her?
Yes, yeah. I think in the first book it's very much personal storyline and crime and then how they sort of coexist. But what I did find quite challenging in the second book was that I didn't have that ability for those things to be as linked. I kept saying to people, it's not Summer Bay, you know, you can't have her have another huge personal link to a homicide again. Like she's not, you know, crazy. Like that's just not realistic. So there was a bit of a safety net, I think, in the first book. The personal storyline was driven so much by the crime and vice versa that they sort of, you know, they come together and that's obviously really important. And you know that right from the start. Whereas with this one, it was a little bit more like what's her personal storyline and then what interesting crime can she be solving that perhaps there is some parallels, but they're not actually directly linked to her because it just that didn't seem feasible to me. But, yeah, she definitely – I mean, I think it is for me – it's a crimes book and it's a crime series, but her sort of personal journeys for me kind of how I make my decisions. So that's how I sort of decide how my plot's going to go, yeah.
Well, I think that's why you just smashed it so much with this one because the first one is you were juggling timelines and it was very caught up in Gemma's past, Yeah, like the crime itself was caught up in her past and she was dealing with all of that and you left her at a place where that sort of seemed like she'd got some sort of resolution.
Yeah.
And now this book, she's dealing with her present.
Yes.
And her present is like sort of a mess. And,
yes.
But she levels up. Like the character development in this is huge. I feel like it's a whole different Gemma. Not even just from the last book, but throughout the course of this book and by the time we get to the end of it. And I have to wait till after the podcast to, like, talk about some parts of it because that would be huge spoilers. But, yeah, the new relationships that she's building in her new workplace and everything, like, to me, I love character-driven crime and this is really character-driven. Plus, you also have this amazing plot with, like, you know, a very interesting crime.
Yeah, thank you.
Are we allowed to sort of talk about the crime itself?
Yeah, like, I think so.
I don't know what constitutes as a spoiler, but there's three deaths.
There's three deaths, yes.
And the sort of most interesting one happens on a set of a movie. Where did the idea for that come from?
Yeah, well, so I don't know the answer to where the idea came from because I, you know, they just seem to pop into my head sometimes. But I did, once I decided that I wanted her to move to the city, I wanted to have a crime that felt big city. So I think, you know, in the small country town scene, it immediately conjures up a certain level of crime and it doesn't tend to be, it can be really sinister and awful, but it doesn't tend to be sort of big or, you know, crowded or very public. And I just thought it would be really interesting to almost amplify that feeling that she has, you know, being a small town person that's for the first time living in a big city, really anonymous, there's people everywhere, and even just the buildings are tall and she's not used to any of that. So I thought, wouldn't it be interesting if she's dealing with a crime that is also big in scale and sort of almost plays with that sense of being anonymous but in a big open space with heaps of people everywhere. So I don't know, once I started thinking about it, I don't know how obvious these parallels are, but to me I was like, oh, it's kind of interesting that that's the sort of crime that she's tackling when she moves to the big city. It's on the street, literally blood on the street. It sort of felt quite fitting. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then I have looked into, there's been a few incidents on film sets where terrible things have happened, and I think there is that weirdness to that where, you know, it's either on camera or there's lots of people around, and it sort of in a way is quite scary, even though I think our normal like crime scene sense is that if you're alone and you're running away or you're in a dark alley and there's no one around, that's really terrifying, which it is. But then I think it can be equally scary when something terrible happens when you sort of least expect it, and you tend to feel safe around lots of people. And so I thought it was kind of an interesting juxtaposition to play around with.
It's a very audacious matter.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of a bit, the only danger with it, I think, is that it does make it a bit less sad. I think perhaps you're a bit more sort of like, well, it's quite exciting, which I guess in a way that is the other thing with celebrity, is that a lot of the drama is actually what people are kind of intrigued by. And even when things happen that are bad, we sort of almost have to remind ourselves of that because we're kind of caught up in the drama of the big lives on TV. So I think there's a few themes that are kind of interesting to play around with.
It is interesting that you say that, I guess, because the murder from the Dark Lake is so personal and everyone knew her. And I mean, with this one, it's the same, but there's also this like level of like the wasted potential and like it's kind of got a Black Dahlia feel, like this amazing, desirous boy who's just gone and no one can really believe it.
Yes. And I think, you know, there's another murder in the book that happens right at the start of a homeless man. So it is that really interesting contrast between someone that literally no one knew, no one sort of really knew as very personally, and then someone that everyone knows their face and knows who they are but doesn't really know them. So it's kind of, you know, there's a few things that I think Gemma navigates quite well, because she does have a lot of empathy. So she's sort of always thinking of people as actual people as opposed to just dead bodies. But I like some of the, you know, references to media and how these cases are covered, and I think it's really interesting. So, yeah, I think the city just provided a bit more of the ability to explore some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first book it was more the claustrophobia of a small town and lots of wide open space. This was in a flip. It was sort of like, there's people everywhere, but in a way it still feels quite kind of claustrophobic in a different sort of version of that. So, yeah, I don't know. I think setting's really interesting, yeah.
There was also a real sense of Gemma kind of adjusting to her natural environment. Like, I kind of feel like, you know, she knows that she has to be there because, I mean, she just has to. It's like a compulsion. It's kind of where she belongs.
Yes.
And you really get that sense that she's coming into her own, like, in her job and herself.
Yes. I think, I mean, she's so not worldly. Like, you know, she's never been overseas. She's not a worldly person. But in a way she was so not right for the place that she was born that she had to leave, I think. Mm. She had to escape. She was kind of really, there was almost no option, I think. So doesn't mean that the transition's easy, but I kind of like the idea that even though she's sort of in her early 30s, this was sort of the life that she was probably maybe meant to have.
Yeah.
And that's why, I mean, it's a bit of a coming of age, but an adult coming of age, because it's sort of the growing up that she never got to do when she was younger.
Yeah.
So, sort of, yeah, it's interesting, I think.
I love her so much. She's such a great character. She's really awesome.
Oh, I'm glad you like her.
She's just fully formed, you know. Like,
does that mean now that you've done this twice, the publisher's sort of leaning in and going, could you do a third?
Because I'd be cool with that.
Yes. Well, there is lots of discussion about that, nothing official, but I've got some thoughts. I find it quite funny. I don't ever, well, when I say ever, I've only written two books, so it's hardly a massive, massive track record, but it's in both of those instances I haven't planned what happens next, except for right near when I'm finishing sort of like rewriting the draft, I sort of suddenly seem to have a bit of an idea of what could happen. So I don't know if it's like my brain going, okay, you've put that to bed, pretty much now let's look into the future, and I can suddenly start to sort of go, oh, there's all these little thoughts I've got about what might happen. But yeah, I've got an idea of what could happen with Gemma next, because I feel like this book, like you said before, Sarah, like she does have quite a strong journey, but it sort of leaves it quite open, I think. So I'd love to sort of see what she might get up to next with some of the knowledge that she's gained in this story.
Well, it's kind of behaviours that aren't really resolved.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, and also no clear sort of life for her either. No. Like it's not like you can kind of see where she might be. It's sort of quite up in the air. I don't think it's unsatisfying, but it's up in the air.
It's really amazing that you're able to do that, like round things off and feel as though you've told this story and this story is coming to a natural conclusion, but the character is not done. Like, she feels like she's just getting started.
Yeah, and I mean, I really love that you love her, but I get a lot of people who don't like her, which I also completely understand. But it always makes me laugh a bit because I think people want her to be different and sort of have this resolution. But then I'm like, but then why would you read it? Like, yeah. It'd be so boring. So it's kind of that funny thing where I sort of go, oh, no, she can be very frustrating and, you know, she's very sort of real and doesn't always make great decisions. But then if she suddenly did settle down and be sort of, I guess, a bit more obedient or however you want to describe it, I don't really know what the story would be. So I do think that there's maybe a maturity that she could show a little bit more and more growing up to do, but you know, people don't change that much, so yeah. I can't imagine she's ever going to suddenly become a cookie baking housewife. Like, that's just not realistic, you know.
As a writer, are you comfortable with, like, I mean, I can just imagine the people in the finance department and just doing the numbers going, okay, book 7 will do this and book 8 will.
I don't know about book 7.
Are you kind of comfortable with that? If they said, look, this character has got legs, this could be the next Rebus, this could be, you know, do you feel comfortable with that kind of a decision? You're sort of going, yeah, I could do that. Or are you happy to do like a trilogy and then...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've definitely got a thought for a third book, so I guess that's sort of where I'm at now. I think that if I felt like the ideas were strong and that there was still sort of story for her to have, I would be happy to write it. I'd probably be a bit uncomfortable if I thought that it had sort of come to a natural end and I was desperately just trying to hack words together to make Alan and Unwin's finance man happy, but woman, man, whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it's just there's an obvious ending to things sometimes.
You just have to know when you're there.
Yeah, and maybe if it did get to a point where a book ended and it was almost like, well, that's kind of where she's at now and that seems happy. Yeah. I don't know that I'd want to kind of like drag her out of that and give her something horrible else, you know, something else horrible would happen to her. But the only other thing I've thought about is, like, I mean, I really love crime. I really love writing crime. So I have sort of thought, well, what if there was a really interesting crime plot that I hopefully might think about? She could perhaps be in it without being the character, the main character. Maybe she could be part of the story, but it's not her journey driving the whole book. Like, that could be interesting.
And that sometimes reboots characters. With Michael Connelly, and I think Rebus, and there's been a few like that where they sort of take a second role.
I could see, you know, like, I guess especially if she became more senior. I suppose I could, as a, you know, detective, then maybe she could be a bit more peripheral and there'd be a junior detective that could kind of lead a bit more, and it's sort of more seeing her in that role would, I think, be really interesting.
Because I don't know whether Kathy Reichs or Tricia Cornwell were, yes, I'm going to write 24 books in a row. You know, I don't know.
I'll take 24 general books and I'll be totally happy with that. But in an ideal world, it would be cool if you continued the series and, you know, wrote other stuff, because, I mean, I would be interested to read whatever you write.
You're writing quite a lot pretty quickly, so...
Well, so far, yeah, it's been a bit of a crazy 2 or 3 years, but, I mean, I like it. I think I'm lucky I do write quite fast, just, I think, naturally, so that helps. But I do tend to write the first draft relatively quickly, and then I have to cause myself heaps of trouble with having to re-edit it because it's a big mess. But that's kind of, I think, just the way that I work. So I don't know if that's from my time in advertising. It's such a fast industry that I just maybe am in that that mode. So I do sort of find myself writing quite quickly. Mm. But yeah, I've gotten a little bit better, I think. I don't really plot still, but I've gotten a bit better at sort of planning out at least the main beats in my head before I try and start writing. Because with this book particularly, I sort of really just had the main premise and just wrote. And I, not that it ended up being a big issue really, but I probably overwrote the book and had to edit so many chapters and words out, which was really just me figuring it out as I went. So yeah. It was kind of just a different way to get there. But, you know, you do sometimes think about all those wasted words and you're like, oh, God, so depressing. So there must be a more efficient way. But anyway, as long as you get there at the end, I suppose it doesn't matter.
Well, that's just the way they do it. You know, you got to put up with it. You can't, you know, it's when you look at the answers to people's questions, how do you write a book, and everyone answers
so differently.
It's just never the
same. It's got to be your own process. And as far as, and I feel like when you have written a lot and you have to take it down, all that stuff that you're taking out, the fact that you wrote it and you figured it out in your head, it's still there in the book in a sense.
Yes.
Like it's solidified the world and the character. And
yes.
It doesn't need to be in there, but you needed to know it. So
that's true. I think a lot of it ends up being backdrop for your own story. So yeah. I've even got, I think, chapters and words and phrases and whatever that I sort of feel are in the book. And then if I ever reread it, I'd probably realize that they got edited out. But that's sort of fine because it probably meant that maybe some of my other sentences get there faster because I can sort of see it. So I'm like, oh, well, that sort of explains it. So hopefully the experience is that you see that when you're reading it. Yeah.
Yeah, and just knowing that these things happened off stage in your head
makes
it like, I just think, look, I love the book, so. However you write, it's working.
Thank you. No, it was fun. I really enjoyed writing the second book a lot more than everyone told me I would. Because I felt like I got a lot of people saying, oh, it's going to be horrific. I'm like, oh, great. I'm really looking forward to that. But I actually enjoyed it, and I think probably having a new setting really helped. And being from Melbourne and having the book set in Melbourne, a few people have said to me, oh, did you have to do lots of research? And I'm like, no, I just had to, like, walk around my hometown again and see it properly. So it was really nice. Like, I'd got, you know, I could go into the city for a day or a few hours and sort of look at stuff that I see all the time but that I haven't looked at properly for years, which was, it was actually, you know, it's kind of like a bit of a gift, really. It's nice.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for coming in and talking about Into the Night. It's been great. We've wandered so many all over the place, haven't we?
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
As soon as this microphone turns off, I'm going to be asking you stuff about the end.
Yeah, but I don't think we did that any spoilers, did it? I think we're doing quite well, don't you think?
Kept it pretty, yes, it's a bit suspicious.
Thank you very much. You can get both of Sarah Bailey's books at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.